The abortion debate has been waged in the courts and in society for decades. It seeks to balance the rights of women seeking abortions against the rights of a fetus. On one side believes in the sanctity of all life, the other side believes in reproductive freedom, that women should have control over their bodies. Is this a moral, ethical, or legal question? Legislators have crafted and passed abortion laws that support whichever position they believe in. Here to examine this still unsettled issue is Michael Perry. He's a professor of law at Emory University. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Interesting show.
Thank you. And, you know, you've called abortion in the United States, quote, one of the most intractable and divisive constitutional controversies since the end of the Second World War.
Yes.
And why? Are you saying that?
Because when the case was decided in 1973, January of 1973, many people, including several prominent legal scholars who self-identified as pro-choice, didn't believe that the court had an adequate constitutional justification to rule as it did in Roe and the companion case of Doe v. Bolton, which concerned Georgia. And in fact, the Roe v. Wade probably has been responsible more than any other case for politicizing the appointments process to the Supreme Court of the United States. We see that up to the present.
We sure do.
Donald Trump says, I'm only going to appoint to the Supreme Court someone who will vote to overrule Roe versus Wade. But the issue in constitutional studies and constitutional theory has simply been whether the Supreme Court acted willfully without adequate warrant in the constitutional text of the United States, or whether it had an adequate justification based on the Constitution. And that has been a persistently, perennially controversial question, and it's no less controversial today than it was back in 1973. Now, let me just put this into perspective by talking about Brown v. Board of Education, which was decided 19 years before Roe in 1954. Obviously, Brown v. Board of Education was enormously controversial politically. Some of us are old enough to remember the impeach Earl Warren signs that went up after the decision in that case. But very few constitutional scholars at the time, and none really seriously 10 years after the case was decided, disputed the constitutional adequacy of what the court did in that case, disputed that there was an adequate constitutional warrant for the court ruling in Brown v. Board as it ruled. By contrast, Roe v. Wade was decided, what is it now, 44 years ago, and the controversy has never died down. It's a controversy that is furious among constitutional scholars, and it's furious among people who are concerned with who's going to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States. So, and I just want to emphasize to you and to your listeners that some of the people who were most critical of what the court did in Roe v. Wade were people who self-identified as pro-choice and said explicitly that were they sitting in a state legislature, they would vote for a policy very much like the policy decreed by the court in Roe v. Wade. Their point was that it wasn't the court's business to force that policy on all the states.
So you're saying that the Roe v. Wade, the Texas law that banned abortion, the court was struck that down, and that was warranted, but you don't believe—
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is many people disputed what the court's ruling in that case. They disputed that the court had adequate constitutional warrant to strike down the Texas legislation or the Georgia legislation, which was much more moderate and progressive than the Texas legislation. And even Ruth Ginsburg, when she was a judge on the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, said in a presentation she made, I think at the University of North Carolina School of Law, that in her view, the court went too far in Roe v. Wade. It should have simply been content to strike down a law that permitted abortion only when the life of the mother was at stake. It should not have struck down the Georgia law, which had more exceptions. So even Ruth Ginsburg had questions about whether what the court did in Roe v. Wade was adequately justified in terms of the Constitution.
You're saying the court was heavy-handed and thus didn't resolve this conflict?
Well, it did resolve it. The controversy concerns whether the way it resolved it was justifiable given the Constitution of the United States.
But it didn't resolve the issue, as we're still facing.
No one can do that, because abortion is going to be a controversial and divisive issue among the people of the United States forever. No one is going to resolve the issue in that sense. There's going to be moral disagreement. And even if the issue is returned to the state legislatures, which will probably happen if Donald Trump appoints a quote-unquote pro-life judge to the Supreme Court, I'll return to that in a moment. That's not enough. But if the Supreme Court were to overrule Roe versus Wade and Doe v. Bolton, and the issue were to go back to all the state legislatures as to whether to criminalize some or all abortions, it'll be very controversial, not only as a moral issue, abortion, it'll be controversial as a political moral issue, namely whether it's appropriate for the law to criminalize this act, even if the court says the state legislatures
can do so. Yes.
Now, let me just go back to Trump and what's likely to happen. I suspect many of your listeners.
That was my next question.
Okay.
How do you see abortion law changing?
There are 5 votes on the Supreme Court right now to oppose overruling Roe v. Wade. If we look at the decision last March in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, it's not only the 4 so-called liberals, it's also Justice Kennedy, who is very conservative in some cases. He voted to strike down Obamacare. Fortunately, the court didn't do that. But Justice Kennedy has been with the liberals with respect to same-sex marriage, abortion, capital punishment on many issues. So even if Donald Trump replaces Justice Scalia with someone who, like Justice Scalia, would vote to overrule Roe versus Wade, you still have 5-3 to keep Roe versus Wade an authoritative constitutional decision. So it's going to take 2 appointments to the Supreme Court by President-elect Trump before that changes.
But isn't that likely to happen during the next 4 years?
I hope not. I don't know. We shouldn't assume that one of the 8 members of the court presently on the court now is going to step down or die in the next 4 years. So I'm not assuming that at all. My fingers are crossed that there'll be 1 appointment.
So how do you see the abortion law basically changing in the next decade? Is it going to be this continued state-by-state battle that has been taking place?
Remember, Roe v. Wade took the issue largely away from the state legislatures. So as long as Roe v. Wade is maintained by the Supreme Court, there is very little the state legislatures can do to change the status quo. You know, Texas tried to do something. It tried to do something that had the effect of shutting down most of the places women would go for abortions, claimed it was doing it in the interest of women's health, but it was obvious to everyone what was really going on. And the Supreme Court in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, by a 5-3 decision, ruled that the Texas could not do that.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, that is all the time that we have for today. This is a very controversial issue, and it is far from settled. Thank you, Emory Law Professor Michael Perry. Thanks for joining me.
Happy to do so. Bye-bye.